This is A Coastal Story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. Sir Richard Carey, born in 1555, seemed like an amiable old soul. He came from a noble Cornish family and had his seat at Antony, close to the border with Devon. He went to Oxford University, where he became friends with the poet Philip Sidney and the antiquary William Camden. He became Sheriff of Cornwall and served as the Member of Parliament for Saltash. The machinations of politics weren't really his thing, though. He loved fishing, to the extent he dug a lake in the grounds of his estate purely for that purpose, even constructing a little artificial island in the middle of it to which he could row and cast his lines without fear of interruption or disturbance. But most of all, Richard Carey was a writer. Richard had ascended to the baronetcy of Antony when he was 8 years old on the death of his father, and the bureaucracy and paperwork it involved put pay to early dreams he'd had of a life travelling and exploring. So instead, he buried himself in books, becoming fluent in French, Spanish, Portuguese and Greek, as well as Latin, and translating a number of important works into English. He wrote an epic poem about a fish called A Herring's Tale, and a passionate advocacy of language called The Excellency of the English Tongue. But his greatest achievement was the production in 1602 of his Survey of Cornwall, an exploration of his county, detailing its trades, flora and fauna, and describing Cornwall's towns and villages, from where he collected and recorded stories. The Survey of Cornwall is among the very first travel books written in English. Now, some of you may know already that I write travel books myself, so you can imagine my delight when I discovered Richard Carey, because it turns out that Richard Carey is my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather. That's 11 greats, if you lost count. So this week, I'm keeping it in the family by relating the coastal story of a Spanish attack on Penzance in 1595 in the words of my ancestor, Sir Richard Carey, or, if you will, Grandpa. It's from the last chapter of his masterpiece, The Survey of Cornwall, and features the most delightful and appropriate closing sentence of a travel book you'll ever hear. So here's A Coastal Story, presented as it was written 420 years ago. Penzance, by interpretation the Saint's Head, is a market town not so regardable for his substance as memorable for his late accident of the Spaniards firing, which fell out in this manner. The 23rd of July, 1595, soon after the sun was risen and had chased a fog which before kept the sea out of sight, four galleys of the enemy presented themselves upon the coast over against Mousel, and there, in a fair bay, landed about 200 men, pikes and shot, who forthwith sent their forlorn hope, consisting of their basest people, unto the straggled houses of the country, about half a mile compass or more, by whom were burned not only the houses they went by, but also the parish church of Paul, the force of the fire being such as it utterly ruined all the great stone pillars thereof. Others of them in that time burned that fisher town, Mousel. The rest marched as a guard for defence of these firers. The inhabitants, being feared with the Spaniards landing and burning, fled from their dwellings, and, very meanly weaponed, met with Sir Francis Godolphin on a green on the west side of Penzance, who that forenoon, coming from his house for pacifying some controversies in those western parts, and from the hills espying the fires in that town, church, and houses, hastened thither, who forthwith sent to all the captains of those parts for their speedy repair with their companies, and also sent by post to Sir Francis Drake and Sir John Hawkins, then at Plymouth with a fleet bound for the Indies, advertisement of the arrival of these four galleys and of their burnings, advising them to look to themselves if there were any greater fleet of the enemies at sea, and to send west with all haste what succours by sea or land they could spare. Then Sir Francis Godolphin advised that weak assembly to retire into Penzance, and to prepare it for defence until the coming of the country forces that he had sent for. But they, finding themselves in number something above 100, wherein were about 30 or 40 shot, though scarce 1/3 of them were serviceable, insisted to march against the enemies to repel them from farther spoils of their houses. But while they were marching towards them, the Spaniards returned aboard their galleys, and presently removed them farther into the bay, where they anchored again, before and near a lesser fisher town called Newlyn. There again with all speed they landed, and embattled in the slope of a hill about 400 pikes and shot, sending about 2 ranks of soldiers, 3 in a rank, up to the top of the hill to discover what forces or ambushes of the country might lie in view, who, espying none but those that were returned with Sir Francis Godolphin from their forementioned fruitless march, gave notice thereof to their embattled company, whereupon they forthwith marched towards Penzance. Upon their moving, Sir Francis Godolphin moved also to enter Penzance before them, and as soon as that weak number were entered into the open green, being of 3/4 of a mile length, the galleys ceased not to ply them all that way with their ordnance from their prows as busily as they could. Of which shot, though none were hurt, but only a constable unhorsed without any harm, saving the show on his doublet of the bullet sliding by his back, yet many, in a fearful manner, some fell flat to the ground, and others ran away. Sir Francis sent after those that were entered Penzance before him, that they should make their stand at the market-place, himself staying hindmost to observe the enemy's order, and which way they would make their approach. Which done, he found at the said market-place but only 2 resolute shot who stood at his command, and some 10 or 12 others that followed him, most of them his own servants. The rest, surprised with fear, fled, whom neither with his persuasions nor threatening with his rapier drawn he could recall. Finding himself thus abandoned, and the enemy entered the town in 3 parts, he was then forced to depart, the enemies beginning their fire some houses behind him. The town thus fired, as also the forementioned little fisher town Newlyn, they returned to their galleys. By this time, towards the evening, the Cornish forces, increased in number and amended in heart, encamped themselves on the green near the town of Marcassieu and St. Michael's Mount for the defence thereof, and there spent out the night. The next day the enemy made show to land again on the west side of the bay, but seeing the people, though few in number yet resolute to resist, they desisted from their enterprise, and besides, finding themselves annoyed by the shooting of bullets and arrows into their galleys where they rode at anchor, they were forced to remove them farther off. Soon after, on the 25th of July in the morning, came thither Sir Nicholas Clifford, Sir Henry Power, and certain other captains who were sent by the generals from Plymouth to the camp, as some of Her Majesty's ships were also sent, who being come as far as the Lizard Head, and those captains to the camp, matters there go on in provident and orderly sort. A plot is laid for intercepting the enemy by ambush if he thrust on shore again, whereto necessity must soon have pressed him for renewing his consumed store of fresh water. But within 1 hour after the arrival of these captains, the wind, which was until then strong at the southeast, with mist and rain to have impeached the galley's return, suddenly changed into the northwest, with very clear and fair weather, as if God had a purpose to preserve these his rods for a longer time. The wind no sooner came good, but away packed the galleys with all the haste they could. Thus have you a summary report of the Spaniards' glorious enterprise and the Cornishmen's infamous cowardice, which, were there any cause, I could qualify by many reasons, as the suddenness of the attempt, the narrowness of the country, the openness of the town, the advantage of the galley's ordnance on a people unprepared against such accidents through our long-continued peace, and at that very time, for the most part, either in their tin works or at sea, who ere the next day made resistance even with a handful, and entered a vowed resolution to revenge their loss at the next encounter if the enemy had landed again. So might I likewise say that all these circumstances meeting in any other quarter of the realm would hardly have produced much better effects. But I will not seek to thrust my countrymen into any other folk's company for shifting them out of sight. Verily, such sudden surprises work more indignity than damage, and more damage than disgrace, and have so been ever construed. Moscow, a head city in a populous dominion, was burned by the roguing Tartars, Anno Domini 1572. The capital, a head fortress in a populous city, was taken by slaves and outlaws, Anno Urbis 292. And yet, who therefore exalteth the Tartars' valiancy above the Muscovite, or the Roman slaves and outlaws above their masters? Besides, such nap-taking assaults, spoilings, and firings have in our forefathers' days between us and France been very common. And yet who is so witless as to twit either of both for the same? But least hold can the author and actor of this tragedy take to build any vaunt thereon. For oftentimes small troops of ours against far greater forces of theirs, yea, sometimes, after forewarning and preparing, have won, possessed, ransacked, singed, captived, and carried away the towns, wealth, and inhabitants, not only of their Indies, but of Portugal and Spain itself, which Nombre de Dios, San Domingo, Cartagena, the lower town of the Groin, Peniche, the suburbs of Lisbon and Cadiz will testify beyond all exception. But our countrymen, leaving reason and example, excuse themselves by destiny. They say it was that the Cornish people should undergo this misfortune, for an ancient prophecy in their own language hath long run amongst them, how there should land upon the rock of Merlin those that would burn Paul's Church, Penzance, and Newlyn. And indeed, so is the rock called where the enemy first stepped on shore. The prophecy is this. Eura ter awar min Merlin, araleski, Paul, Penzance, ha Newlyn. Diogenes, after he had tired his scholars with a long lecture, finding at last the void paper, "Be glad, my friends," quoth he, "we are come to harbour." With the like comfort, in an unlike resemblance, I will refresh you, who have vouchsafed to travel in the rugged and wearisome path of mine ill-pleasing style, that now your journey endeth with the land. To whose promontory, because we are arrived, I will here sit me down and rest. Deo Gloria, mihi gratia, April the 23rd, 1602. That was A Coastal Story. And I'm Charlie Connolly, the great, 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 great grandson of Sir Richard Carey.